Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's B-Y-T-E.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. I am your host, Mark Ellis, live from our new studio here. I would say that we are in the shadow of Universal Studios, but to be honest, this building is so tall and we're on a very high floor. We're kind of casting the shadow over Hogwarts, over Jurassic World, all the good stuff that you get with that theme park. Now we're here. And we're going to talk about a movie, which we usually do on Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong, but it's a very special movie because this is our very first show in the new studio, and we're welcoming everybody to your Thanksgiving holiday. Have a great time. Put this on while you're at the table, while you're passing the stuffing, while you're eyeing those mashed potatoes. Put this podcast on because it's celebrating an all-time Thanksgiving classic, at least in my eyes. Maybe not in the eyes of the tomato meter. We'll see how my two esteemed colleagues feel about it. Obviously, my co-host Jacqueline Coley is here, and we also have our very special guest, a dear friend of mine, a long time, maybe the longest friend I've had in Los Angeles, Justine Marino. You know her from her podcast, Glitter and Garbage. You can see her in Wisconsin Live, December 8th and 9th, and she's here right now.
I'm here, back in my old stomping grounds as a former tour guide at Universal Studios. It's like I'm coming home.
Jacqueline, she used to give the tour at Universal Studios.
I've taken it, like, as both an employee and pre-employee.
I was going to ask.
You know?
Yeah, because a lot of people, like, you move out here and you just kind of want to, before you get into whatever your career is going to be in LA, you kind of just want to know, like, what is there to do out here? How do I get the vibe? Kind of like what our character experiences in the movie were about to introduce.
Yeah.
How was the tour?
So the tour was great. The first time I went with my dad, and it was the typical kid comes to visit the dad, go to all the tourist attractions. We went by the Hollywood Walk of Fame, so on and so forth. But the second time, when you become a Universal employee, part of the indoctrination, like right after they put the chip in your brain, they decide that they want to take you into like the lot. And so they take you to the archival area where they have like the original mask from, you know, the first Frankenstein movie or something. Like, it's just everything's all old and awesome. But the other thing they do is they let you take the Universal lot tour. And so you get to see Jaws jump out. It's different now. I mean, now they have Hogwarts. Now they have all kinds of stuff you can go to. Like,
who was your tour guide? You remember? Could it have been Justine?
Could it have been a young Justine
Marino? When did you get here?
I mean, I got here in 2016. I became an employee in 2017.
Oh, okay. No.
Justine was already super famous with
very
funny
famous
dance show.
And I don't think you did it when I was a 12-year-old because you would have been a 12-year-old.
Thank you so much for saying
well
that. I recently got bangs because I'm bangs or Botox years old now.
No.
I went with bangs. So thank you.
Bangs or Botox? No!
The cheaper of the two options, I hear, but there's still a lot of maintenance with either one.
Yeah, there's maintenance and bangs are very risky. I have a very love-hate relationship with bangs.
You're rocking them, though.
Thank you so much. My first bangs in about 14 years, since I was a tour guide, actually. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
You both look amazing
amid
very different hairstyles that I've known you both to have over the years. and if you folks are wondering, hey, speaking of hairstyles, I wonder what Carla Gugino might look like as a blonde or a redhead, depending on which scene you're looking at.
Girl.
You need to see Son-in-Law, the Pauly Shore Thanksgiving classic featuring Pauly, Carla, her entire family back on the farm, and just who is this guy you brought to Thanksgiving? You met him. He's your RA in college. What is going on? Son-in-Law is a movie that is 32% rotten on the tomato meter. Somehow, some way, the audience score helps it rebound, 59%. Oh, so close. It's fresh adjacent in terms of the audience. If you wanted to know, are there other Thanksgiving movies? Yes, there are. There's a lot of them. Justine and I covered some on her podcast last week, and now we're talking about the 60 best Thanksgiving movies on RottenTomatoes.com. You can check out The Gold Rush. The Charlie Chaplin favorite from 1925 is number one. I don't think anybody's unseating that anytime soon. I always forget Miracle on 34th Street.
It's a Thanksgiving movie.
It's a Thanksgiving movie.
It's a Thanksgiving movie because that's when it takes place. But my favorite is Home for the Holidays, the Jodie Foster one,
yeah,
when Robert Downey Jr. was very not sober.
Yes,
oh,
yes.
Yeah.
That's a great one. There's a few, though. There's a ton of good Thanksgiving movies.
Is that, that's Holly Hunter, too, right?
Yep, Holly Hunter. Very
and Claire Danes is in it.
And Claire Danes.
Uh-huh. Good that's one. A good one. Oh, well, I mean, obviously, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Obviously.
Tearjerker. That,
but that's a low. That's a low score. It's not as high.
It is?
Yeah. They didn't like it. They felt it was angry.
I mean, there's scenes where Steve Martin's anger, but it's just so perfect. And
it's
just him and John Candy together. And we almost lost the guest this week because Justine was furious because she wanted to know how the show works. And so, like, I sent her a clip from you and I and Doreen Arellano talking about another great Thanksgiving movie, Family Addams Family Values, right?
Oh, yeah.
And Justine's like, why is Rotten Tomatoes isn't wrong? This movie's certified. This movie's fresh on tomato.
Yeah.
This is, and I'm like, no. It can get even higher.
So
you can debate either way.
I agree. I think it should be 100%. I should preface this by saying I have a Wednesday Addams tattoo. All my tattoos are movies and TV references.
We've had such a tattoo centric part of the podcast in the open lately. We've been definitely diving deep like fan tattoos.
And it figures into the plot of this movie.
It does. And I just got a Heart of the Ocean tattoo. I mean, I'm in it. I love movies. So I'm ready to discuss Son-in-Law.
Yeah, we might have to have a tattoo reveal at the end of this show.
I might have to get a munching on some grindage tattoo after this. You guys.
I mean, mine that you can see is definitely showing, and we will take our tours on any else.
I love it.
I do want to add this one thing. Just real quick, you are not a basic butterfly tattoo girl.
Oh,
I just want to put that out
there. Thank you so much.
I appreciate you for being
here.
Thank you.
And, you know, we can get the fans involved, too. Our catch-up crew, regardless how you enjoy this podcast, whether you listen to us, you watch us, you do both. Thank you for all the clicks, for all the rates, the reviews. Email us, rtiswrong@rottentomatoes.com. Let us know, what tattoo should Justine get to honor Son-in-Law? Should it be, like, a picture of Pauly Shore? Should it be a quote? Should it be some sort of farm mechanical instrument?
Well, you know what's funny is my very first tattoo was one that we pitched on our former podcast, Three's Too Much. I jokingly said I wanted to get You Got It, Dude, tattooed on my body
from
Full House. And then Mark, I believe, said you should get it in French or Latin, and I got it in French.
Spice it up a little bit.
That was my first tattoo.
Your first tattoo.
I have a tattoo in front. Okay, we got to go. Let's get down to brass.
Let's get to Rotten Tomatoes is wrong here. Is Rotten Tomatoes wrong about this score, Justine? 33% on the 32% rotten on the tomato meter.
Uh-huh.
Is Rotten Tomatoes wrong?
I think yes. And as someone who has watched Son-in-Law twice in the past 36 hours, I will argue this point till the day I die. I think they are so. I mean, Pauly Shore in his first kind of leading movie, he had just done Encino Man, and Disney was like, you know what? Let's give him a leading role. And I think he's pitch perfect in it. The lingo alone, I mean, munching on some grindage is just iconic. It speaks to that MTV 90s culture era, and I just can't get enough. I think it deserves 110%.
Yeah, it was a giant leap from Encino Man to this, where you're still that funny side character, but now you're leading with Carla, and you have to have more of an emotional core to you.
Yeah.
So Rotten Tomatoes, definitely wrong in Justine's eyes, and via my text receipts with her over the last 36 hours, I can ratify that. Jacqueline, how do we feel?
I feel so, it's going to be okay. Listen.
Oh,
I have horrible taste. I should say that. I love garbage. So
no.
I should just say that right
you
off
know what?
The bat.
This is fine because I do too. Just maybe. I love Pauly Shore in this movie.
Okay.
I adore him in this movie. I think it is like such pitch perfect casting. He is playing on a level of comedic and sort of slapstick and doing some stuff that I think is brilliant. The movie is not that girl. The movie is not. She is where she needs to be.
All the way down to 32%.
I could charitably give her a 40 if we wanted to just give a bit more for the Weasel Riz, which I want to talk about in great detail. But yeah, it's kind of right. Like it's kind of right that it's at 32 and the audience is at 50, because even as much as I like it, I feel all 50% of that audience is saying it like I am, which is this Pauly Shore's movie. I love him in this. You know,
okay, I'm with the audience way more than with the tomato meter here. The audience score, again, just south of fresh, 59%. I'm going to get it to 60%. I think this movie deserves to be fresh. It's a big movie in my history because it's one of those movies you go with your friends and like you feel a little bit of independence for the first time because your parents dropped you off in the minivan and now you're at a theater by yourself. Mm-hmm. And you just kind of left your own devices and you got to watch this movie. I mean, this movie was a lot like seeing Friends or something like that because I was maybe 12 or 13 when it came out. And so you're kind of already sort of prognosticating what is your future going to be when you get to move out, when you get to be on your own, go to college, start a life. And you see this as like sort of inspiration, like, wow, I can do that. I can be that guy. I can be that gal. So there's a lot of excitement built into this movie from my past, but I also just thought it was a nice holiday movie. So that's enough from us for now. We're going to turn it over to our good buddy, Tim Ryan. He's our expert review curation manager here at Rotten Tomatoes. And he's going to tell us what the critics were saying at the time of its release, while I was sitting in a theater watching this movie, 2 Minutes with Tim. 2 Minutes
with Tim. In his book, The 90s, author Chuck Klosterman attempts to capture the national mood of that crucial era. In order to do so, he devoted several pages to the phenomenon that was Pauly Shore. Quote, "Part of the complexity of living through history is the process of explaining things about the past that you never explained to yourself. So many temporary realities, distantly viewed in the rearview mirror, will appear ridiculous to any person who wasn't there." Klosterman goes on to say, "The prospect of multiple studios building feature-length comedies around a non-actor with a niche MTV following does not translate as a workable strategy. Yet, at the time, it did not seem strange. It did not seem strange at all to anyone. There was a sense of inevitability to the Weasel's ascension, as if this thing no one had asked for was obviously the culmination of what pop culture had been careening toward for half a generation. Of course Pauly Shore should star in a bunch of mainstream movies. Of course that was going to happen." End quote. I read from this extensively because it's totally correct, and there really is nothing quite like Pauly Shore's movie stardom these days. I'm also not sure there's a single figure today who draws such consistently scathing reviews as the Weasel did back in the day. Encino Man, Son-in-Law, In the Army Now, Jury Duty, and Biodome are all rotten on the tomato meter. In the Army Now, Jury Duty, and Biodome are all in the single digits on the tomato meter, with Jury Duty at 0%. To be fair, Encino Man has its defenders, as does the best-reviewed Pauly Shore vehicle, Son-in-Law, starring Shore as a man named Crawl, which most critics found to be stupid and unfunny, but a few found to be stupid but funny. Son-in-Law is rotten at 32% on the tomato meter with 22 reviews, and it has a 59% audience score. So what did the critics have to say? In a rotten review, Roger Ebert of the Chicago Sun-Times wrote, "This story was never going to be great movie making, but it might have been more palatable if Shore had been able to make Crawl even marginally likable." However, in a fresh review, Destin Thompson of the Washington Post wrote, "Well, the movie's dumber than a coop full of chickens, but Pauly Shore makes a funny barnyard animal." The Rotten Tomatoes critics' consensus reads, "While there may be some mild culture clash yucks to be had for those who enjoy Pauly Shore's shtick, this Son-in-Law is too obnoxious to be worthy of bringing home to your family." So that's Son-in-Law. Let's get you back to Jacqueline and Mark, two people I'm proud to call buddies.
Thank you for not leaving us hanging, Tim. Appreciate that. And hearing all the scathing reviews, even the positive reviews sounded like they had to get a few jabs in at this movie. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot to talk about here, including the Pauly Shore of it all and Justine and I's relationship with the Weasel today, as he is frequently around the Comedy Store, as are you and I and Jacqueline some nights on the patio. Brian, hit the music for Movie Talk. Yeah, Justine, I recently ingratiated Jacqueline into the ways of the Comedy Store hang at the patio, and she really took to it very quickly.
I did. It's harder to get back now. Also, you don't go out anymore. I've invited him to things now. Now he wants to go home to his gummies.
Oh, yeah. He's a homebody for sure.
You know, he's always been a homebody, but now he's a home hostage.
Yeah, I'm kind of like to get to me to leave the house is more of a stretch these days. Mm-hmm. But obviously, when we go out for stand-up, you and I see Pauly a lot. When when we're at the Comedy Store. Worked with him for years now, and he's just like a friend, and it's really cool. There were talks about getting him on the show for this episode. Brian, I think we'll put a pin in it for now, and we'll try to get him. We haven't done Encino Man yet, right?
Okay. I would do jury duty.
Okay, that's
interesting.
I would do jury duty.
We've never had a guest that stars in the movie we're talking about when that movie is 0%.
I am a defender. I am not a defender to say it needs to be certified fresh. I know.
This
I know.
You're a very complex person.
And I'm loving it. Even
by the way, you didn't have to date me for 2 years to figure that out. So you are very intuitive. This is what I will tell you. Sorry, that's like cuts deep. That movie has multitudes. It has a huge environmental like streak to it. It absolutely talks about, like, it has Stanley Tucci slumming it after his divorce, playing like a character that we need to examine further. It is the perfect weird little ensemble. The characters are just so delicious. It is it is dinner for schmucks. It's so good.
Okay, so oddly enough, Jury Duty is the movie where I kind of fell off going to see the Pauly Shore films in the theater.
Same.
Because I talked like Pauly Shore for 3 weeks after I saw Encino Man.
Really?
I was love that movie.
It's so good.
We saw it opening weekend and just kept going back. And again, it's one of those movies where the Encino Man, the kid's trying to dig a pool. Sean Astin's character, just trying to dig he just wants to be cool. Yeah. And then he finds his caveman and his best friends with Stoney, played by Pauly Shore. I love that dynamic. And so from then on, I was a Pauly Shore fan. And I feel like, Justine, you're probably on the same wavelength, even though you were younger than me. You're what, like 6 or 7 when Encino Man came out?
Yeah, and I actually somehow convinced my mom to take me to see Son-in-Law in the theater, even though I was 8. But I remember vividly going with my mom because she knew I just rode hard for Pauly Shore.
And your parents are historically, from the stories you tell, very, very cool.
They're cool parents. They are cool parents. I was telling you guys, I went from Barbies to 90210 basically overnight. So, of course, I was seeing Son-in-Law in the theater. I think I was just like a hair too young to see Encino Man in the theater, but it is one of my favorites. I run a show at the Comedy Store where comics give away stuff from their life. I gave a DVD copy of Encino Man away and people went nuts over it. There was almost a fight over an Encino Man DVD in the main room at the Comedy Store.
Physical media, baby.
It really is. And just a beloved character and movie. And I love the nod we get to it in Son-in-Law as well.
Nice little Brendan Fraser cameo in the college Halloween party scene. Jacqueline, were you a Pauly gal at all? Did he cross your radar as a youth?
Yes, because TNT was a Pauly guy for some reason. TNT was obsessed with him.
Loves Pauly Shore.
Seriously, they had Biodome in the Army Now. They had, obviously, Son-in-Law and Jury Duty. But yeah, I saw all of his movies pretty much on cable in between commercials. Also, like, TBS also played the heck out of him. Mm-hmm. So no, I was a fan, but I was a discerning fan. Mm. It was good when it was on, but it wasn't like I was like queuing up for every single one of them. Does that make sense? I don't mean I say that, but I liked all the ones I just mentioned. So
yeah, I mean, I feel like this movie does such a great job of setting Pauly up for success, because I remember, again, opening weekend seeing this movie. And by the way, this movie opened like 4th of July weekend. This was July 2nd. So it was going up against Tom Cruise and The Firm. It was going up against Jurassic Park. It was going up against Sleepless in Seattle.
Wow.
Dennis the Menace. Like, it had its hands full and it held its own. It was a budget of $8 million. It ended up making a little under $40 million worldwide. So you see this movie and it opens up and we get how conservative of a background Carla Gugino's character comes from. She basically was raised on a farm, small high school. She's the valedictorian. She wants to go to college. She wants to spread her wings. Her family's hesitant. You're going all the way out to California to college. You have this small circle of high school friends who factor into the movie later on. She's got this boyfriend. And then she goes to college in Southern California and everything changes. A lot of it is due to the fact that her eyes are open to new types of people, new types of experiences, like her resident advisor right across the way from her, Crawl, played by Pauly Shore. I did not know that you could have a co-ed dorm as a freshman in college.
Really?
And I still don't know if that exists.
Yeah. No, it does.
Okay, I take that back. I kind of lived in one my freshman year.
I was like,
It was like dudes were like on one side, and then you had like the common room, and then you had the ladies on the other side. It wasn't like dude, female, dude, like just like right next door to each other.
Oh, mine was.
Really?
I think it was, athletes. So we lived in the athletes' dorm.
You guys have your own little Olympic village?
No, but it was just all the athletes stayed in one dorm, and then there were just regular people that were also in there, and the athletes and...
Like, normies?
Yeah. And the non-athletes were mixed, and the athletes were segregated, but that was mostly just because they were segregated by their teams.
Wow, okay. All right.
I was in the party dorm, so it was free-for-all. Boys, girls, whatever. Sleep wherever, you know.
So kind of like son-in-law.
It really was like son-in-law. That was the kind of dorm I lived in. Yeah.
There's no better intro to Crawl in this movie than having him swinging upside down, meeting the everybody's favorite American dad in the 90s, Lane Smith.
So good.
And just that that sets everything in motion that you need to know about Crawl versus this family, who he's going to end up warming their hearts a little bit.
Yeah. I will also say that was actually not my dorm. That was my friend's dorm. I was in the all-girls dorm because my mother would not allow that. So let's be very real. That was just the dorm I hung out in, not the dorm that I was in.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So, Justine, what about this movie still holds up to you all these years later? You watched it twice in the last 36 hours. What was it about this movie that you said, you know what, I already did my homework, now this one's for fun?
Again, I should preface this by saying I have a pretty addictive personality. I don't do anything hardcore except, like, movies. Like, I've seen Titanic 21 times in the theaters.
In the theaters,
21 times. Mm-hmm. So if I like something, I'm going to do it a lot. But I just feel like it really, first of all, I hadn't seen it in a while. So it was that nostalgic, you know, bringing back the feelings of the 90s, which are kind of trendy right now. So it was just kind of like a warm hug from Crawl, to be honest. And I just love that out the gate, he's just this like 45-year-old RA. He's been in college for 19 years and he's just, that's just him. And he just has this incredible self-acceptance. And I love that. And I love how he does win over the family. Like, it's just really sweet. And I think it's a really... organic. It's not like one of those movies where it's like they hate him and then they love him. I do feel like he earns their love and that they earn that turn in the storytelling, which I love.
Yeah, you know, it's so odd watching this movie, Jacqueline, because Paulie walks that fine line where he's clearly just this horny dude who lives amongst beautiful women in SoCal, but he also has this nurturing side where he's not gonna step over that line and become like a predator, right? Yeah. So he's like, hey, you're like even looking at Carlo Gugino's character, like, you're super hot,
yeah.
But he's not gonna cross. He's still gonna be an older brother to you,
yeah.
Unless she kind of initiates contact, so to speak.
And
I can't imagine. There's very few, I think, comic actors that could pull that off, mm-hmm. where you buy into it. And it might just come down to the fact that he's just such a weird dude, and he's just got such an odd personality, this weasel kind of thing, that you just believe it because Carla believes it.
Yeah,
I wonder if she believes it as much as. Because she is the country bumpkin in the city. Because, like, listen, he's the original Alan. I will give you that. Like, you know what I mean? The world full of kids. Yeah, he's the original Alan in this movie. But at that time, that original Alan is way more likely to morph into, like, a bad... You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I think being around the family is what allows him to... maintain the goodness because, like, there's shotguns present. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot more.
That's a good point.
I don't know if it would have been the same if it would have been like the spring break trip. You feel me?
Sure, sure.
Okay.
The Thanksgiving, and by the way, I'm not taking anything away from him. There is definite Riz that is being operated by Pauly Shore in this movie that I did not expect to see,
right?
Especially in like the comforting moments, especially in the moments where you really see that if he didn't say the right thing with her, she's definitely going to kind of unravel in the situation.
Yeah.
But some things defy belief a little bit. You know what I mean? Because Carla is Carla.
I was so into Pauly Shore, even at like this young age, I had such a crush on him. And it's crazy watching it now. I was telling my boyfriend, I was like, yeah, I loved him. He was like, really? I was like, yeah, why is that hard to believe? He's so charismatic in this. And he's like, well, first of all, he's not 6 feet tall. And that's that's kind of a requirement for me, usually. But that's how charming he is that he could slide in under 6 feet.
He could be that diminutive point guard.
He could just be.
Makes the team.
He could be. Absolutely. Can we talk for a second, though, in that dorm scene?
Yeah.
The little brother, Zach, who's played by Renna. What's his name?
Patrick Renna. Who was the catcher in The Sandlot.
Yes.
And as soon as I say that, multiple generations know exactly who we're talking about. He steals scenes in this movie.
He absolutely does. First of all, he's wearing a t-shirt that says "Seduce me, please."
Yeah.
Can we talk about that?
Mm-hmm.
He's just going through her new roommate's underwear drawer.
And he's this 12-year-old kid.
He's 12.
His eyes are being opened at the same time the chubby 12-year-old in the theater watching the movie named Mark is.
He is the voice of the chubby 12-year-old.
He was for all of us.
He really did. He's going through. And then the roommate comes in and, you know, Becca is like, I'm so sorry. And she's like, my family's exactly the same way. I'm like, everyone's little brother goes to people's underwear drawers? Like, what's going on?
The answer
is
yes.
Like, this dude
speaking
is...
as a little brother, the answer is a 1,000% yes.
Are they that pervy, really?
Yes.
That's what I was like, what's happening?
Wow.
Yes. And it never, it's not like it got
so
better.
Funny.
Wait, I'm
because
sorry.
We got influenced by these movies. And then you had Beavis and Butthead right afterwards. Like I'm not saying that we're the most well-adjusted generation. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's right there. And your sister's having like, especially if you have an older sister like he did and I did.
Yeah.
It's like they're having sleepovers.
Sure.
And it's like you're talking to, it was the only way to talk to an actual female who was like a little older than you and a little more streetwise is because your sister was friends with her. And then it like, lo and behold, not because you're on a date with this person, but just because she happens to be spending the night at your house the same time you are. Just the interaction. It's like a cool babysitter almost, you know?
Yeah, but you don't touch her. Like, let's hands off the panties. I know y'all were raised by Revenge of the Nerds, but hands off the panties.
I mean,
that's the line.
Most of it wasn't in like a sexual way. It was like it was like capture the flag. It was like you got into the girl's base and you stole a piece. It was probably my sister's son. It doesn't matter. Then you run back and it's like we claim something that's ours. Because like I would have my friends sleep over and my sister would have her friends sleep over. And it's just it's a big war, you know? And it's not like they were innocent either. They were sneaking into our room and, you know, recording
we're
going
to have to put a disclaimer on this episode.
I'm just saying, this is what happened in every household
and
in the 90s.
You know what?
Pauly Shore has made it more innocent and fun.
Read
and
up
Patrick
on,
Renna did too than I did.
Read up on consent, kids. Okay, let's go.
But Patrick Renna's character is so necessary in this movie because I think he's one of the reasons why we as an audience start to warm to Crawl after we meet him initially because he's a really fun sort of wacky like Bluto Butarski type character in college. But then when you put him in a different setting and he comes back to the farm and it's a big surprise to the family. This is before cell phones and emails. And she's like, you know, I'm going to show up to the airport and buy 2 plane tickets.
Mm-hmm.
And the family knows she's bringing a friend home. They don't know who the friend is. They assume it's a roommate.
Mm-hmm.
It's Pauly Shore getting off the plane. And just imagine if you're there to pick up your sweet daughter who you're so nervous about sending to college in California. She comes home to visit for the first time and it's her and Pauly Shore coming home.
What would your parents think?
My parents might, you know, they would be accepting, but behind closed doors, they'd be like, what are you doing? What's going on? What, are you okay? Like, if I came down as a blonde, because I have similar color, we were both brunettes, Italian, you know, fair skin. If I came out and had this, like, strawberry blondish bob and this dude wearing a scarf in his head, like, that my parents would be like, what's happening?
Yeah.
What's going on? Are you okay?
I love that they saddle him with the brother, with Patrick Renna's Zach, because that's when you start to see the older brother side, the resident advisor side of Crawl come out, and you start to realize that he actually can have a positive impact on the family. He's not just here, unlike what the parents may think, he's not here just trying to hook up with your daughter, okay?
Right.
He's actually there because he loves to spread positive energy like our buddy Brody Stevens. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a very odd duck, yeah. but he also just loves making people happy and uniting. He's a uniner, mm-hmm. okay? And so sometimes that means that you're having a raging party and you're cracking a lot of inappropriate jokes. Other times it's just you see a family that is clearly splintered. Even if you're the splinter, yeah. you're like, I can unite people around yeah. this and sort of rally folks and separate the do-gooders from the not do-gooders.
Right.
I think the issue I have with this movie is it feels like a movie that was written by somebody that grew up in the 70s trying to write for people that live in the 90s.
Oh, boy.
Do you know
okay.
what I mean when I say mm-hmm. this? Because there's so many aspects of, like, being a kid in 92, you probably had MTV. You know what I mean? Like, you probably had all of the accesses that we have to what makes culture, culture. Like, the minute cable TV became prevalent, and even after that, because, like, say you didn't have cable TV, they were still talking about MTV on regular TV. Mm-hmm. They're talking about MTV on the channels that you can still get to on the basic lanes. And so, I don't know, I just feel like this is a movie where kids that were living in the town where this girl came from were definitely not going to be as shocked as, like, maybe the parents were when somebody like this guy comes off the plane, or vice versa, when she gets on the plane to go to college. It was the weirdest thing in the world as someone that lived in a small town to be, like, people getting shocked that somebody looked different coming back from college. That was, like, a given. Everybody was making bets on that being happening. And, like, these are not too far apart. Like, that was shocking in the 1960s. It's not shocking in the 1990s.
I think I read a few of the reviews because I was like, how is this possible? You know, yeah. like, I really need to get to the bottom of this. It makes no sense.
It's more shocking to me that you had to investigate.
That's a fantastic guest who not only comes on to defend a movie, but creates her own bulletin board mm-hmm. material. Is like, I'm going after these critics.
But a lot of people had the same note about the movie that, like, this town, people in the small towns would be aware of it. People in the small towns would, some people would be trying to emulate what was going on in the bigger
town. Small town girl.
So I get that. I come from an improv background. So I will yes and whatever you give me. I'm a great audience member. I will suspend all disbelief. Sure, you guys don't know what a blonde bob is. Okay, sounds good. I'm in.
Yeah, yeah. I would have my hesitation sending you, particularly young lady, to California to go to college. I would not let you go follow U2 on tour all summer like Liam Neeson did in Taken, because that's not going to end well. But with this movie, like, yeah, I mean, look, I grew up in Williamsburg, Virginia, okay? Mm-hmm. Colonial Williamsburg. And yes, we had MTV, we had all that stuff. But there is a line of demarcation between what was going on with MTV and you see Becca's bedroom before she leaves, and she's got a Travis Tritt poster, she's got a Garth Brooks poster. Like, that's her world. So Fair? That's sort of everything that's pop culture-y mm-hmm. is still country.
And she's a horse girl. She is the epitome of a horse girl.
Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to say that that was who she was and then she became something different when she got exposed to other people. I'm just saying the shock around that is yeah. the part that I am sort of incredulous.
Sure.
And I stand by what I say. I actually didn't see this before. This thing has 6 writers on it. And if any one of them was under 30 when they wrote this thing, I'll be shocked.
Well, it feels like 3 of them were brought in to mm-hmm. To Pauly Shore up the line.
Yeah.
Because he created his own dialogue on the MTV Spring Break shows.
Yeah.
Before Encino Man, and then obviously Encino Man started to get into the lexicon a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I feel like he is very of the 90s. Then everybody else around him might be a little too Green Acres-y.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, no, we were a little more civilized by the time this movie ends up being released.
Sure.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Do you remember the kid Jesse on MTV?
Yes.
Who, like, won the MTV.
The really tall one?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I remember.
I have no recollection of this human.
Yeah. Well, I'll ask you then. I just realized that was just Pauly Shore in a different font.
It really
and
was.
I don't know why that
in
never.
In a different font?
Yes. It was.
Was
just Pauly That's Shore amazing. In a different font because he was like, zappa doopa da.
Yeah.
And he, you know, yeah. he was doing the stuff.
He had the curly brown long hair. It really was. And he dressed very funky. It really was just over 6 feet Pauly Shore.
Yeah, he left him off, so you'd love him. I mean, over 6 feet and Pauly Shore.
I mean, I was wondering how you felt about it because I realized the thing this movie made me feel sorry for, it made me feel sorry for the MTV movies of the 90s. It made me feel sorry for the Saturday Night Live movies of the 90s. It made me feel sorry for the $10 million comedy that maybe made 60 at the box office and then made a boatload on DVD. Like, this whole...
Oh, so it made you miss those kind of movies?
Yeah, like the fact that this movie, like, it does not exist now.
No, it's a weird thing because, like I said, the budget was under $10 million for this movie.
Yeah.
And it did sort of help. It was early. It wasn't in on the ground floor necessarily, but it was like the second or third floor going up in the high rise that was these kind of comedies where you can put a comedian or you put some sort of celebrity in a situation I would say that these early Pauly Shore movies worked about as well as you could do with that. Because, like, you had Andrew Dice Clay a few years before, mm-hmm. who was huge. Mm-hmm. Selling out Madison Square Garden before that was, like, a regular thing comics did. Mm-hmm. And the movies, it never quite translated the same. Afterwards, you had the comet that was Jim Carrey
yeah.
in 1994, who was just yeah. the brilliant of brilliance, put in these zany situations where he's either a pet detective, or he's got a crazy mask, or he's just a moron with his buddy Jeff Daniels. But, like, it, then you had Carrot Top, you know, yeah. with, like, chairman of the board.
No,
and
fair.
So, you know, there's a lot of situation comedies you can just put a famous comedian in a film. Very hard for them to carry it for 90 minutes, I think, the way that Pauly did.
Yeah, this is going back to this era of Hollywood was like when they used to do Abbott and Costello movies. It was just Abbott and Costello in this. It was Pauly Shore mm-hmm. in this, Pauly Shore in that. You know, it's like that is what that reiteration of yeah. it is that you had these comedy acts. Jerry Lewis, when mm-hmm. he did his thing, it's like you're seeing the same Jerry Lewis, Dean Martin in every one of these movies. And Pauly was, I think, just like the other echo of that.
I
you
think
know
getting
what I mean?
getting into the family aspect, getting away from Crawl a little bit, I think the other reason why I'm sort of gravitate towards this movie is because I have an older sister and younger brother, mm-hmm. and any sort of dirt that you can get on either one of them is such valuable collateral. It's blackmailness, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And so when Zach finds out that Becca has a tattoo, he's holding that over her because the tattoo reveal mm-hmm. is the all-time classic. I've been in college for 3 months, and now I'm back home for the holidays, and I'm a totally different person. Justine, do you have a tattoo reveal in your past? Jacqueline, do you have a tattoo reveal in your past?
Oh, this is a great question. You can go
I
first.
Don't have a reveal, but I have 10 tattoos, as I mentioned before.
Did your parents know the first one was happening?
They did. Again, my parents are cool. So
did they do it?
I think, yeah. Len did it.
Why don't
Len
you just stay home and have a Chardonnay where we can kind of keep an eye on you?
But no, I think they were probably surprised I didn't have tattoos from earlier. I remember when I was 17, I went and tried to get a tattoo, which I'm so glad they would not do, because otherwise I would have a Dave Matthews Band fire dancer.
Oh, man, we missed out.
Yeah, man, but that would have been epic now. Yeah.
Right?
That would have went from great to cringe to I really regret this to now iconic. Yeah. It would be iconic
right?
now.
Right, right. But yeah, so I have a lot of tattoos. As I said, they're all pop culture related for the most part. And luckily, my parents were cool and it was not a shock to them. My dogs, my parents' dogs didn't hold it over to me and threaten to reveal it to them at the Thanksgiving dinner table. But what about you?
So it was a family time home back when I used to visit home. That is no longer in the cards anymore. But back when I used to visit home, I don't know. I think I got out of the shower and like she saw this one.
Yeah.
Which is not the first one. This is the third
and
one.
And unbeknownst to her, there was a tattoo on
yeah,
her little girl's
and,
body.
And she definitely made it about her. Absolutely. And if I recall correctly, it was like, you know, the look, like she looked at it, she put her hands around it, and then she like looked like she was going to fake cry. And I was like,
oh no.
And she's just like, how could, and like, you looked like literally like she'd seen that somebody had hurt her baby. And I'm like, yeah, I did it.
Yeah.
Like
I did.
Like, this is not something to tear up about. And so I just kind of like stared in that weird emotion. I was like, why do you care? And now I'm looking at a full sleeve. So like the next time I see her, she will be just completely shocked because it's going to be like all down here.
It becomes like this initial yeah. trauma, I think, for some of the parents. It eventually becomes like a funny story,
yeah.
like a bonding sort of thing. I had this exact situation that plays out
really?
In this movie.
Really?
In my family. But I was not the Patrick Renna that outed her. My sister did it herself, but us kids came up with sort of a plan, right?
To get her to out herself.
My sister enjoyed college. She enjoyed traveling more. So she went to many colleges over many different semesters. She did a semester in Arizona. She's like, I think I want to be a Wildcat for a weekend. So she goes to U of A for a semester. Luckily, it was the semester but after Christmas, before summer. And so we got to go out there as a family and visit her on spring break, right? So we went out there, our spring break, not hers, obviously. So we get out there and my sister's like, there's this great Mexican place, Casa Molina. I hope it's still there because the carne seca was fantastic. We go there, and again, like, my parents weren't, like, big drinkers, you know? So, like, you didn't see them, like, you might have, like, my dad might have a beer at dinner, that's about it. My sister orders margaritas for them. And I'm like, ah, what's going on here? And then she shows, I see a tattoo that she's going to reveal, but she's waiting to get my parents hammered before she shows it to them. My parents end up drinking 3 margaritas apiece. Then the tattoo reveal happens, and my brother and I are high-fiving because we don't know if Lisa just pulled off Mission Impossible or if she's in serious trouble. Either way, we're going to celebrate. And my parents ended up having to give the keys of the van that we rented to my sister to drive back to campus. And
who can talk about irresponsibility then?
That's the exact plan my sister had, and it worked out to perfection. So my parents are now like the drunk passengers in an Uber, and she's driving home, and my dad's giving her directions, making up street names, tickling himself with laughter. And that's how you do a tattoo reveal, kids. Wow. If you're worried about how your parents are going to react, get a little bit of sauce in them first, and I promise the giggles are going to happen eventually.
What a well-adjusted answer. I would just suggest going to a lot of therapies to the point where you stop caring.
That can also work, too. It might be a little more pricey than a couple margaritas at Casa Molina. Favorite scenes from this movie? What's the scene that really sucked in? Jacqueline lit up.
Oh, she did.
I literally did because I wanted to make sure. I love a city slicker out on the farm moment. Like when they're getting him cowboyed up and like he's gonna, it is better than the My Fair Lady fashion montage. Mm-hmm. It is better than the Pretty Woman, Big Mistake, Huge. It is such a Cinderella moment. I love it. It is one of the reasons why I love him in this movie so much.
Okay.
I was going to say, I also enjoy the makeover. I love that in this movie, we see both makeovers.
Yes.
Most movies, you only see one makeover. We see the farm makeover and we see
to
Becca.
The farm.
Yeah, to the farm. Exactly. And then we see
farm to table, table to farm.
Exactly. It is that. And I love that we get to see both. I'm a sucker for a makeover montage. I love fashion and hair and accessories. So they get me really excited. I also really do like the scene where Crawl is in the bedroom with Zach and he kind of wins him over with his computer hacking skills.
Hacking was huge.
Hacking was so big. And I just love that they gave Crawl this kind of complexity that he's kind of an idiot otherwise, but he's really good at hacking. Yeah. And I just really felt that that made him a much more complex character, which
that's
I love.
That's the growth from Encino Man to Son-in-Law.
Yes.
Because Encino Man, he starts, he middles, and he ends as this weird stony weasel character.
Yeah.
In Son-in-Law, when Becca's homesick and he's trying to like rally Becca to be like, no, you got to give college an actual chance. You've just been existing here for 2 months. You haven't really embraced the process. And then he shows her the yearbook picture of him as a freshman. And it's like, oh, no, wait, he used to be. You remember what his name was?
Oh, was it Fred?
Fred Weasel. Yeah.
Fred Weasel.
And so he's like, I need a nickname. So he gets Crawl, and then he just becomes this other person that he was sort of meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that is such a leap from where he was in Encino Man. But what I love about this movie, and I think that this movie handles that romantic comedy, sort of the thing that loses me a lot of times is when like we're having a great time, we get to see the makeovers, and then there's I'm going to catch you two in an awkward situation that makes it look like you hooked up, but you really didn't. And I know I actually love you and all this thing centered around Tiffany Amber Thiessen, Kelly Kapowski from Saved by the Bell, who's
the
in
best.
This, the evil ex-boyfriend who, in his defense, was about to propose and then gets dumped.
Yeah, but he was cheating on her with Kelly Kapowski the whole time.
Bag.
Also, when you hear this, I think you'll change your mind. The original name for the character was Chad.
And his name now is Travis. So he's got two of the best kind of, you know.
But if he was Chad, no one would have even questioned to feel sorry for him.
Yeah, that's true. No. That's true. And also, I mean, I don't feel sorry for him at all. I do think it's interesting, though, that at the end, when it's revealed that, you know, Tiffany Amber, that they didn't sleep together, Tiffany just joins the family for dinner. It's like she was still boning Travis, you know, like
that's
they
the
were
country, though. We don't talk about that.
OK, OK. Yeah. I didn't know. I'm just not familiar.
Yeah,
OK, no. Great.
We brush that under the table.
OK, that clears it up for me.
As soon as you said that, I was like, oh, she doesn't know. They could literally be doing cunnilingus on the turkey and everyone would be like,
bless her heart.
Oh, OK. Then I have no questions about this movie. Perfect film. If that's the case, that was the one lingering question I had.
I do rescind my any sympathy I had for Travis because I forgot he was cheating on her, on Becca to begin with. So he's a loser through and through. I love the parents.
Yeah.
Wayne Smith, Cindy Pickett as the Warners, and Mason Adams, who Mason Adams and Lane Smith both have that, oh, that guy from that movie.
Yeah.
Mason Adams, the grandpa. who eventually gets won over. And once you win over the grandpa of the family,
it's over.
Because why? Blackmail. That grandpa has stuff over everybody in the family.
He's been around longest.
He probably already sniffed out the fact that Tiffany Amber Thiessen was hooking up with Travis.
Yeah.
So he probably knew, and now it's like, now it's out there, so it doesn't matter anymore. Here's my parting question for the both of you.
Mm-hmm.
Do Crawl, who ends up with Becca, sort of quasi-engaged at the end of this movie, do they work out?
Yeah.
Because there was actually, they initially did it just to get through the week, and then they were going to go home and recess. I feel like there's definitely a spark.
Yeah.
I don't even know if they end up in the bed together, though. I'll be honest with you.
I think they date. Mm-hmm. I do think they maybe get it on. Mm-hmm. I just don't think it's endgame.
I don't think it's endgame, but I do think the friendship is endgame.
Yeah.
Like, I think they hook up. They're like, no, we're better as friends.
Yeah.
And then they both just stay best friends. And you have that kind of will they or won't they forever.
Yeah. It becomes that 6 month situationship that you do with a friend that you should have never done that haunts you for like the next 5 years.
Do you think it's maybe because she was barely 18 and he's 6 years in college and the resident advisor?
I did think about that. And so when he was, I was like, okay,
it's a little groomy.
Now I'm doing some
math. It's a little groomy.
Yeah.
If you like, like you could recut this movie like they did that movie Passengers with like Chris Pratt.
Oh my
and
God.
And it's kind of like, you know, like you can make this like somebody actually internet. Listen to me. Somebody needs to do like the Daniel LaRusso is a bad guy cut. Have you seen that?
Yes.
To this.
Or it's like making Toy Story into a horror movie.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Like Crawl is a predator.
Yeah.
Like that is the way to go.
I mean,
with that one.
That's very easy to prove. He's filming girls in the hallway.
Yeah.
I mean, look, again, it was the 90s. It was a different time. I'm willing to brush that aside. But I think it's kind of crazy. Also, he's a terrible house guest.
Yeah.
And he's just talking about like, oh, you guys were getting it on. Oh, you left me with a semi last night, like in front of grandpa and the mom.
He puts it all out there.
He really does.
He
steals a tractor.
Like, like imagine it's like, and now he will commit emotional terrorism on the elder folks as he details all of the sexual positions that he plans to do with their very chaste daughter as a threat.
That is one way to interpret this film.
It is. But again, I'm willing to brush it aside because he's just so dang charming, you know?
He did. The one issue I have with this movie, maybe the biggest issue, is it did make me believe for a long time. I'm glad I grew out of this phase now that we all have one. I always thought the camcorder guy was the cool guy at the party.
Mm.
Like, man, that guy's just the cool. That's not. No, don't be. It's
Love Actually told the tale on who that guy
look.
Really
oh,
is.
Oh, yeah, it's
yeah.
true.
Love
that
Actually.
Might have been the end that game was for camcorder guy.
That was the movie where I was like, from now on, both camcorder guy and let me take your picture guy.
Oh,
purse.
Yeah.
But all of them.
Also,
purse.
I really hope we're coming to an end with the acoustic guitar at the party guy, because that was just like,
oh no, but they've been replaced by let me do you my freestyle rap guy. So
I mean, Barbie had a great scene with acoustic guitar guy, so maybe 5 years from now we have Barbie with like rap guy instead.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely, I mean, we already did, it's the Timothée Chalamet skit with Pete Davidson. Yeet skirt. I'm in my bag today.
Like, and with that, we are going to bid adieu to the Warner family, their adopted son, who may or may not be engaged to their daughter, Crawl, played by Pauly Shore. That is Son-in-Law, and that is going to take us to the end of the show. Hit the music, Brian. You know, Polly's been doing stuff recently. He's got this one-man show that he's been taking around town that he's done at the Comedy Store. He's done at Flappers. And it's garnered a lot of positive reviews. There was that, like, he was circling this Richard Simmons thing. I just don't think Richard Simmons was ever that into it, but about doing a biopic about Richard Simmons. And, like, you look at Polly now, and I'm like, he could pull that off.
Yeah. And especially since Richard got famous looking a certain way. Like, we don't need to look at the young Richard Simmons as much.
Right, right.
Although, you know, now with this new deal. I'm just kidding.
young Richard Simmons was probably Fred Weasel.
Yeah.
And then he found himself, and he was this flamboyant, energetic, but very, you know, loud dresser. And that's exactly who Paulie was in the 90s. The Steven Tyler PJ scene.
Yeah.
Just the difference in the shorts.
Yeah.
That's really it.
That's
so
all
true.
It. Okay, so we might be in, if there is, a Pauly Shore starring Richard Simmons biopic.
Mm. I'm in.
Justine, where can we find you and all of your brilliant comedic genius?
Oh, thank you, Mark. You can find me on all the platforms at Justine Machine One. My tour dates are in my Instagram bio, my Linktree. And you can find me at the Comedy Store, the Laugh Factory, the Improv in Los Angeles.
Always hitting the bricks, telling mm-hmm. the jokes, making the people laugh. Yeah. It's a pleasure to have you finally. I can't believe this is your first time on the show.
I mean, I love garbage, so I'm surprised I will come on anytime. Anytime you need me, I'm here to say Rotten Tomatoes is wrong.
But you never saw Jury Duty?
I did see it. I just didn't see it in the theaters.
All right. Okay. Yeah, I haven't seen it. So
you haven't seen it?
No. So that might have to have Justine back for a very special episode.
I'm ready for Jury Duty. I just, when he cut his hair, something,
it was different.
It was different. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was like when Felicity cut her hair in the 90s.
Like when Metallica cut their hair.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
I have a question for you, sir.
Hit me.
Do you have any dates coming up?
I do, actually, because this is Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to be in Seattle right before Christmas, December 22nd, 23rd. I'm going to be up there. You can get tickets at markellis.live. And then I got a bunch of tour dates, Boston, Portland, Chicago, San Diego, going into next year. So look forward to that. And thank you, everybody, for joining us today. Jacqueline, what's going on with you?
I wanted to just say, I never have anything to promote, but I do now.
Yes,
you do. Because we have a newly launched podcast. And I know everyone listening to this is going to be sad about it because it's just me. But Mark will pop in, I'm sure, at some point. But it's the Awards Tour podcast. If you want to know what I'm doing when I'm not here and I have to disappear for a few weeks, this podcast will give you a, like, what's Jacqueline been up to in the awards landscape? And so we're going to be interviewing some great folks. One of our first episodes with Ludwig Göransson. He is the composer for Oppenheimer, Wakanda Forever. Also, the coolest, like, Norwegian you'll ever meet. Like, dude is just so fly and just really talented.
And the podcast is called Awardster?
The Awards Tour Podcast. Like, we're taking a tour around awards season.
Like the
Tour de France.
I love it. I'm happy for you. Find it wherever you get podcasts. I know what this is. I know exactly what this is. This is an alibi. Because I have a theory about Jacqueline that she actually, when she goes to all these, like, international film festivals, she's actually doing, like, wet work for the government. Like, she's
you are not going to Garth
like a Navy
Brooks
SEAL.
Me. You are not going to Garth Brooks me like Tom Segura did to that
stuff.
Man.
And so now she has this cover alibi podcast. But I'm proud of you in the new endeavor. I can't wait to check it out. Check out Glitter and Garbage with Justine.
Oh, yes, my
you
podcast.
Might see me sometimes on that show as well. So I'm just a guest. That's all I really am. And they let me host here in our brand new studio. So for everybody here at Rotten Tomatoes, friendly reminder, once again, email us rtiswrong@rottentomatoes.com. Let us know. Should Justine get a son-in-law tattoo? What's your favorite Pauly Shore movie? And the biggest question of all, the title of this show, is Rotten Tomatoes wrong about son-in-law? What do we got next time? We are in the studio, Jacqueline.
This is going to be a family affair, because we are family. We're doing the family man, Mr. Nicolas Cage.
Mm. Ooh, okay.
Yeah, I like this movie a lot. I like it because I get to say Teo Leone, who I have to think is the best name in Hollywood ever.
Yeah, it's pretty great. And she's pretty great in that movie. Yeah. And we go from Thanksgiving to Christmas next time we talk. Until then, for Justine Marino, Jacqueline Coley, producer Brian, everybody here behind the scenes at our brand new studio overlooking Universal Studios, I am Mark Ellis. Welcome back, everyone. We'll see you next time. Rotten Tomatoes is wrong.